I think God might be calling me away from ESPN. I said, something's going on here that God is stirring inside of me. And she just looked at me like, no, what are you talking about? We are in Bristol, Connecticut because of your job. And you work for the dream job. Disney owns you. You get all these perks and benefits and great health insurance and great life insurance and a great opportunity to, you know, work in such a cool place. Why would you want to leave that? And I said, exactly. I don't know why I want to leave that, but I know that God is stirring something inside of me.
Welcome to the Man in the Pew Show. I'm Phil Mershon, and I'm your host, and this show is brought to you by maninthepew.com. This is the show for men who want to be serious about their faith in all aspects of life, at work, at home, at church, and at play. Well, you were just listening to Jason Romano, this week's special guest, and he is going to talk about why he left ESPN, his dream job, to step into a full-time vocational ministry where he serves athletes who are Christians and tells their stories. It's a great interview. One of the verses that Jason mentions is in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, where Peter says, always be prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. And I love that last phrase, and that's something that Jason hones in on. We have opportunities through our work to talk about our faith, and not just in our work, in our neighborhoods, and everywhere we go. First, are you ready? But second, do you know how to do it with gentleness and respect? Think about that as you listen to this week's episode with Jason Romano.
Well, I am excited today to have with me Jason Romano. If you don't know who Jason is, he is a former ESPN producer, spent 17 years with ESPN. He recently left to start Sports Spectrum, which he has a podcast there where he interviews celebrities from the sports world and talks about the integration of sports and athletes and athletics. He is also a father, a husband, an elder in his church, and a soon-to-be author. So, Jason, welcome to the show.
It's great to be with you, Phil. Thanks for having me.
All right, Jason, so I like to start everybody with their baseball card stats. So give me just a background. How long have you been married? How many kids do you have, and where do you live?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me about my baseball career. I was ready to go right with you, Phil.
Oh, well, we can go there.
I didn't have a baseball career. Little League baseball career. That's about it. There you go. So I have been married to Dawn since 1999. It'll be 18 years this November of 2017 that we would have been married and will have been married. And we have one daughter. Her name is Sarah. She came along in 2004. And she's been an amazing blessing to us, and in a lot of ways, a miracle child. So that's pretty much it. Yeah.
And you live in Connecticut?
We live in Bristol. Yep. So I'm living here in Bristol, Connecticut, which is the home of ESPN. And I haven't moved yet. I've left ESPN a couple months ago as my job, but we're still in Connecticut, and we'll be here for probably a good little while. And Central Connecticut.
Absolutely. So the next thing I'd like to ask you is just a bit of your faith story, whether it's your conversion story itself or a significant milestone along the way where God got your attention and you became much more serious about your faith. So what would you like to share?
Yeah. So for me, I'll give you a little background. I grew up Catholic, but very nominal. I wouldn't call myself serious about my faith really throughout my childhood. I did go to church. My grandfather would often take me Sundays, you know, occasionally to church. And so there was seeds planted by my grandfather, who passed away about 10 years ago. So I really appreciated that, but really didn't have a relationship. Honestly, I didn't even understand what relationship meant with God or with Jesus. I had no clue. And nobody really ever shared that or explained that to me in my youth at all. And kind of just went through the normal sort of, hey, I go to church on Christmas and Easter. That's kind of what I did. And throughout high school, after I finished 10th grade, I really never went to church at all. And even unless my mom asked me to go on Christmas or something as the family went, that was pretty much it. And so throughout my high school, college years, into my early to mid-20s, really, again, did not have any kind of faith in my life. I knew God existed. I heard basic stories of Jonah and the whale and Jesus on a cross and things like that, but and Adam and Eve, but that was about it. And if you had asked me about anything regarding my faith, I would have just kind of laughed at you. I definitely was not walking with the Lord. I always tried to be a good person by the world standards. I didn't get caught up in a lot of sort of worldly sin that's viewed negatively, if you will, but I certainly wasn't, again, walking with God. So I was walking with the world. And it wasn't until 1998 or so when my middle brother, I have two younger brothers, Chris, and the youngest brother is Damien. And my middle brother, Chris, had this faith conversion and radically was saved. I mean, radically, from just walking really down a bad path to suddenly this different person. And for him, he needed that. And I saw that and I saw a change. At first, I thought he was crazy. I thought he had joined like this cult or something. I had no idea what he was doing. But I really saw a not only a heart change, but I saw an outward change in this guy and the way he was trying to live his life, the way he talked, the way he treated people. And it was really inspiring to me. Again, it took a while before I was even remotely interested in what happened to him. I was happy that he just wasn't kind of doing the same stuff he was doing before. So fast forward, I had been to his church a few times, and it was May of 2001, Mother's Day, actually, of 2001, 16 years ago, when my mom and myself and my younger brother, Damien, were invited by my middle brother, Chris, to his church for Mother's Day. We all agreed to go. And again, I had been at this church before. And just to paint the picture a little bit, this church was a full gospel, Pentecostal, like speaking in tongues and dancing in the spirit and heavy duty preaching church. I grew up a Catholic. So that's night and day for me when you go to a church like that. And again, the first couple of times I went, I was like, where am I and what am I doing here? But that last time, that Mother's Day trip to my brother's church, I didn't hate it as much. I don't tell people I loved it because that's not true. I definitely did not love it. But I remember walking out of there and I said to my brother, I said, you know what, Chris, that wasn't bad. And he just kind of had these big googly eyes looking at me like, really? You didn't hate it? And I said, yeah, I said it was all right. And so we end up going back to his house for the day with my family. And as we get to the house, he basically grabs my arm and he looks at me and he says, come here. And he kind of pulls me back and we go into his back bedroom and we just sit down. And he's like, so that wasn't so bad, huh, that church service? I said, yeah, it was okay. And he recognized the moment where my heart was open to receive what he was about to share with me. And that's when he shared with me what the gospel was about. And I accepted Christ as my savior that day. Now, for me, it wasn't this miraculous sort of amazing conversion, an immediate conversion. It wasn't like that. I did it because it felt right, felt like the right thing to do. And honestly, I figured I wanted God on my side because I wanted him to answer all the prayers I had for him, you know, all the things I wanted him to do for me. So I was like, eh, why not? We'll put God in, you know, bring God into my life a little bit. But it took me about a year to fully understand what that decision was and what prayer I had prayed that day. And so it wasn't until probably a year later, May, June of 2002, till I really fully grasped the salvation message and what Christ had done on the cross.
And I think that's not uncommon for a lot of us. I became a Christian as a teenager. I first became a Christian because I just wanted that fire insurance. And then,
of course,
you know, I started to understand what it really meant for God to be in control and how great that was, to really appreciate the depths of his mercy and the greatness of his plan, which is so much bigger than my own. So I think that's very normal that we have kind of that increasing levels of commitment. So when you became a Christian, though, you were already working in your dream job. You were working for ESPN.
Correct.
Which I don't know how many guys listening are sports addicts, but I watch ESPN every day, pretty much at least. I'm a basketball fan, football fan, former tennis player. So I'm watching regularly, watching NBA scores right now as we speak, you know, with the playoffs. So you're in this dream job. You've become a Christian. How long was it before you started getting serious about sharing with your fellow coworkers and others in the industry, you know, because I know that what became a passion over time, but was that immediate or how did that unveil for you?
It was definitely not immediate. And I remember the first couple of months of the year after I had prayed that prayer, you know, when I firmly started to grasp what it meant to be a Christian. And I remember going to work and telling people, you know, I'm going to try not to curse anymore. You know, and they would look at me like, why? What are you trying to do? I had this, you know, this faith thing happen in my life. And so I would tell them a little bit. But then I realized that a couple things. Number one, I really wasn't living my job was definitely separate from my faith life. And I always viewed my job as sort of that was my job. And my job very much, and I know this has happened to a lot of people I've worked with, it becomes who you are. It becomes your identity. It becomes how people know you. You're the ESPN guy. You're the guy that has the dream job, the cool job. And so that I embraced that before and after becoming a Christian and definitely allowed that to happen, that became my identity. So for the first 4 or 5 years of being a believer in Christ, I really didn't have any opportunities that I felt that I needed to share my faith at work. I definitely didn't deny God in the sense that if somebody asked me about if I went to church or whatever, I didn't deny that, but I definitely didn't walk like in a way where I felt like my identity was in Christ and not my job. I definitely had my job as number one in my life over my faith, over my marriage, over my daughter, even when she was born. You know, my job, I felt like, was the number one thing. And it wasn't until a moment around 2009 or so, so we're about 6, 7 years, 8 years after I became a Christian, that I had this moment where I thought my faith was getting stronger. My faith was getting, you know, more serious. And I started to actually have the thought that maybe I'm not supposed to be at ESPN right now. And I didn't know what that meant. And I thought, well, maybe I need to go work for a company like the Fellowship of Christian Athletes or Athletes in Action or something that had sports in it, but that had a faith connection. And this is 8, 9 years ago now that I'm telling you this story, because I told somebody who came to work that at that time, this exact thing, what I just told you. And this person looked at me. And it was a day when we had Tony Dungy, the coach of the former coach of the Colts, the Hall of Fame coach. He was there. And my job that day was to take him around ESPN and walk him around. And it was his assistant, Jessica, that was with him that I shared this with. And she looked at me like a stern mom would look at their kid after they just did the worst thing you could ever imagine. When I said this, I said, I don't think I'm supposed to be at ESPN. She just looked at me and shook my head and said, you do not get it. And I said, I don't get what? And she said, you don't understand the mission field that you have at ESPN, that God has called you here right now to be a light to Him. And she's like, you are to bloom where you are planted. And right now, you're planted in Bristol, Connecticut at ESPN. So stop trying to look around and trying to get out and understand the mission field that you have right where you are. And it's like this big light bulb got brighter and brighter over my head, like, you're right. That's it. I get it now. And for that, from that moment on, I really changed. It changed how I approached my job. You know, I wasn't going in beating people over the head with a Bible and telling them they needed to repent right away. I wasn't doing that. But I certainly took an extra effort to make sure that I was being intentional about the life that I lived, and that ESPN, as great as it was not number one in my life. It wasn't even number three in my life. It was my faith in God, number one. That was the center. No, I wouldn't even put that number one. I'd just say that was the center of who I am. But number one was God. Number two was my marriage. Number three was my relationship with my daughter and being her dad. And then somewhere under there, after my family and my extended family, my brothers, is my job. And for a lot of people at ESPN, that was hard to grasp because their job was, like I said, their identity. It was the number one thing in their life. And I just got this, I don't know, this epiphany, whatever you want to call it, that I needed to be intentional about what I believed and who I was talking to and building relationships and just being open about my faith when called for in my job.
So I want to pause on that idea of blooming where you're planted, because I think there's a lot of guys listening, and I know I've been through this myself, actually, even just last year, God re-convicted me that I'm in a mission field. I run a conference for this year. We had 3,000 people from all over the world who came to learn social media marketing. And it's like the pinnacle of events for our industry. And you know, because you've been in social media marketing,
yes,
you know, that it's that's a big conference. And I was like, but I'm, you know, I want to be a minister. And God said, no, you're a minister right where you are. You don't have to work for a church or a nonprofit to be a minister. You minister where I've planted you. So that's so a true. Big idea that God said, stay where you are. But it, to me, that's a huge thing too, listening to your story, saying you went from here's like in your industry. And for a lot of guys listening, this is the dream job, to work around all those amazing athletes and to actually get paid to watch sports and talk about sports and to feature other sports. I mean, that is a big deal in our culture. And for you to say it, you don't even know where it fit in the priorities. It wasn't in the top three for sure. That to me is like transformation had happened. Your heart had been completely changed and you were able to say, I'm willing to let go of this dream job. And now you're coming back in and saying, but I'm going to stay because God has put me here and I realize this is a mission field.
Yeah, and it's funny. It's very true. And I wouldn't say I was ready to let go of the dream job at that time. I was more just trying to understand why this thought was entering my head. Why am I thinking about maybe not being called or meant to work here for the rest of my life? Why is that kind of taking place? And honestly, that could have been a seed that was planting back then that's kind of come to fruition now, to be honest with you. But I wasn't trying to leave ESPN, I would say, back then. But what I was trying to do was understand what God was trying to say or speak through, you know, my thought process, through what his word said, through the people I was talking to. And yeah, you're right. Like it was this sort of eye-opening experience to just understand that, yes. And I don't want to paint the picture that ESPN, when it went down sort of on the chain of command, that I didn't care about my job. Trust me, I loved my job. I loved saying that I worked for ESPN. I loved going to work every day. Yes, there were moments when it wasn't the most fun, but listen, I mean, look what we were doing. We were the toy store. You know, we were playing in the toy store every single day, basically, with sports. So I truly appreciated that, and I liked my job a lot. I got to do so many great things and so many cool things and meet so many neat people, but it's just the priority was not fully, it didn't mean my heart wasn't into it. It just meant on the priority list, like my family's first and Christ is first and my marriage is first. My marriage, all those are way more important than my job. If those things aren't in order, then it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter about my job. And quite honestly, I probably couldn't do as good a job as God wanted me to do if those other things aren't in order. So it was really just sort of this moment where I got it. Everything clicked. It was almost like just snapping a finger and there it was, you know, it just made sense to me. And so I guess in a way, what you said is right. I guess I became sort of a minister at ESPN, which is weird to say, but it's kind of what it was.
So tell us a story or two of now that transformation's happened in your mind and you're seeing your work as a mission field. What's something that happened that gave you increasing boldness to share your faith and talk about it?
Yeah, it's the first thing was social media. You know, you just mentioned it. 2009 or so is when I really started to get deep into social media and understand that. And understand that a platform could be created. And so I jumped on Twitter right away and really enjoyed being on Twitter. And I understood, you know, that this was such a cool place to kind of get information. So it became my sort of digital newspaper. But then I started thinking, oh my gosh, this is such a cool way to share your faith and to be open about the person you are, not about your job. And listen, I tweeted a lot about my job. I did. And I understood that that's why people might be interested in anything that I have to say. But then I was like, wait a minute, I can be open about my faith. I could share Bible verses, which I still do every single morning. I share a Bible verse on my Twitter page. And that's just something I've done for almost 8 years now. It's an easy way for me, I think, to give some encouragement to people when they wake up and they might be checking their Twitter feed. And so that really was a game changer for me, is just being open about my faith through social media and remembering that all the people I worked with that were on social media were following me, or I was following them, or we were friends on Facebook or whatever. And so I knew that they were seeing what I was posting. Now, I was very intentional about the type of post that I made. I wasn't ever going to post about politics for the most part. I wasn't going to get deep into theological discussion about different views, beliefs. But I wasn't going to, I basically tried to model 1 Peter 3:15, which says, always be prepared to give a reason for the hope that's within you. Do it with gentleness and kindness. So that's what I would do. I would tell people the reason I have a hope, but I would never force it on them and tell them why they need to believe or what they need to do. And I think there is a model that gravitated not only from social media, but into my life. Of that's how I wanted to approach my life, my relationships with people. I wanted them to know that I had this hope. And this is what I believe, and this is what God did for me. If you don't want to believe it, no problem. I'm still going to love you. I still want to be friends with you. But that's really how I kind of approached it. So social media was a game changer for me. And once that happened, that opened up opportunities and doors for me to share my faith in the workplace. I remember the Boston Marathon bombings, 2013 maybe it was, somewhere in there. The marathon bombings happened. And it's right in the middle of the day, and we're at ESPN, and a lot of us don't know what's happening. Is it a terrorist attack? What's going on? You know, is this 9/11 all over again? What's happening here? And Boston is about an hour and a half, 2 hours from Connecticut. So it's very close to home as well. And this guy who I worked with, I don't even think I knew that he even prayed or was a Christian, or even still today, I don't know if he is. But he came over to me and he said, I would like it if you prayed for the people of the Boston bombings. Can we go into the break room? And I was kind of caught off guard. I said, yeah. And I don't think I've ever shared this story before, to be honest with you, Phil. But he called me into the break room, and we sat down in the break room, and he just went to me and he said, okay, you start. And I was kind of caught off guard because remember, you're still at work. And even though it's a break room, it's still ESPN property, and right. You're still on the job, but we just kind of both bowed our heads, and it was just him and I. It wasn't like this group of 20 people, and I just started praying. I said, I pray for the people. I pray for, safety and health and everything you could possibly pray for in the situation, and we didn't fully know the details by that time, obviously, and what had happened, but then he prayed, and I found myself opening my eyes a little bit during the prayer, which you probably shouldn't do, but I wanted to kind of see, like, is this real? Is this guy really praying? And he was. And that was it. Like, we didn't have this huge spiritual experience of talking for the next 2 hours about God. We just went in and prayed for like 10, 15 minutes, and then we went back to our jobs. And so if I hadn't been open about my faith in some forum, whether it be social media or whether I had a conversation with this guy previously, you know, he is not coming to me to look for that moment to pray. And he did. And I just really opened my eyes to, like, wow, people are seeing that I have a faith. And I'm not trying to brag about that or anything, but I'm just like, all right, God, you get the glory here. Because the one thing I've always wanted to do after that moment in 2009 or 2010 was to never be denying the Lord and always try to be an example of what God wanted me to be in the workplace. And that day really kind of confirmed that a little bit, like, okay, God, you got me right where I am for this purpose, for this reason, to do this thing right now. And that was a really powerful moment for me.
I got chills as you're talking about it. And it reminds me of something that I've tried to practice, which is, you know, watching for divine appointments, keeping your spiritual antenna up, so to speak, so that you're always expecting God's going to do something around you. You just don't know when it's going to happen. And yeah, at one level that catches you off guard, right? But another level, no, of course, God's going to give you an opportunity to pray with somebody if you're open to it. But if you hadn't, you know, dialing back to when you first started talking about your faith, you'd found a way that was appropriate, relevant for you to share what you really believe in so that people could see that you were living a consistent life. You know, it sounds like you were really trying to allow your faith to shine through, although you weren't preaching to your coworkers.
Right.
Yeah, but your life was preaching. And so they knew this about you from social media. And so that becomes an opportunity. What would you share with the guys listening? Because not everybody is going to have a social media platform the way you do. where they can share Bible verses. What are other ways that you would encourage guys to be more open about their faith so that they can open doors?
Yeah, I mean, my encouragement would be simply to love and to serve the people you're around. And when you do that, you're going to build relationships. And as you build build relationships with no strings attached. And that's hard, you know, because we're always looking for sort of confirmation or some kind of love back. And, you know, that's not what Jesus did when he was here on this earth. That's he loved unconditionally everyone, even the people who hated him. And he's on the cross dying right before he dies. And he says, Father, forgive them for they don't know what they're doing. You know, asking for forgiveness on the people that are hating you and mocking you and in essence killing you, you know, that's loving people who you might not get love back from. And so we're to model that. And I believe the encouragement is to just build relationships with people who, including the people, and this is the hard one, but including the people you don't get along with or you don't think would want to build a relationship with you because of disagreements or, you know, philosophies or even just how you approach your jobs differently. But build those relationships because at any point, I mean, yes, there's those moments where you might just be sitting next to a stranger and have a conversation and 5 minutes in, you're sharing your faith with them. Sure, that happens. But it's really about relationships. You know, when I got saved as a Christian, it took 3 years and the relationship with my brother to truly blossom and grow until I was ready to receive what he had to say. Sometimes those things take even longer. And so for me, to be an example of Christ, to walk as Christ would walk, whatever you want to call it, to be his hands and feet, are to love and serve. And when we do that, we're giving ourselves up to take it out of being a me-centered life. And I'm stealing the words of Ernie Johnson, the TNT analyst, because he just said this to me on our podcast. He's like, I'm taking the word, taking myself out of it and going from a me-centered life to a Christ-centered life. And that's really what it's about, is that Christ-centered life of being a servant, of loving others, of building relationships. And through those relationships, and I just know this from experience, Phil, through those relationships that you build, you're going to get to know the people that you're having these relationships with. You're going to get to know about their family, about their interests, what they like, what they don't like, what they do when they're in their spare time, whatever. And they're going to want to know the same thing about you. And that's your opportunity. That's your open door. That's your vessel to say, you know what? I like sports. I like watching Netflix just like you do. I like doing all these things, but I also love Jesus. And so I go to church on Sundays and I also speak sometimes. And it just opens up doors to share about the person you are. And again, they might not really be ready to receive a full gospel message, but they're going to be at least receptive to hear about you because you built this relationship. You built up this trust with them to be open and to share.
Well, I think one of the things that you began doing, it sounds like, is you began developing that missionary mindset so you could be ready to plant those seeds and then to explore when it became time. I'm guessing there's another thing that happened for you as you became intentional at that date. This is something that happens to me in my industry, is I become a magnet for people who are of faith because I'm open. You know, I've always been open on social media about the fact that I'm a former pastor, I'm a worship leader, I'm willing to talk about my faith, I don't preach. You know, I do like you, I share scripture verses every now and then, but I'm not constantly talking about it. But what's happened as a result of that for me is I start finding all these people in the industry that I'm in who are also believers. And they look to me as it's an encouragement to find someone else who's a believer. Did you find that also happening, that people started seeing you and they became more confident themselves in coming out and talking about it? And then all of a sudden you realize, man, there's this whole network of believers out there who are in this industry that you wouldn't have known.
100% yes. It's amazing to, and that started to happen in social media early on, but it really didn't kind of get bigger until I became a little bit more intentional about some of the things I was posting. And, you know, originally early on, it was all sports and a Bible verse in the morning. And by the time I left ESPN, it was pretty much all motivational / inspirational / scripture / my experiences with a little sports sprinkled in. So it was different. This world of faith, I'm smiling because it really changed everything. It changed. It was the beginning of why I left ESPN 2-3 months ago, if you want to know the truth. So 3 years ago, I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, a man named Matt Brown reached out to me, and you may know Matt. He's on social media. He's a very, he's an author, and he's a blogger, and a guy who works in a lot of different faith aspects and areas. And Matt reached out to me because we had followed each other a little bit on Twitter, and he asked me to come speak at this social media conference called the Best of SMS. And it was out in Nashville, Tennessee, summer of 2015. And Matt invites me early on. It was like Christmas time of 2014 that he invites me. And I asked him, I'm like, okay, who's going to be at this conference? And he said, well, it's social media strategists like yourself, but they're going to be from churches and nonprofits and faith-based companies. And I said, oh, okay, that's interesting. Yes, I'll come. So when I got there, I didn't realize this, but throughout the whole thing, I was the only person there and the only person speaking and the only person even in the audience listening to the other speakers who did not work for a faith-based company. I was the only person who worked for a secular company in ESPN. And I'm watching and I'm listening and I'm meeting these people and building the relationships even in just a few short hours and realizing, oh my goodness, there is a network of people out there who are doing the same thing that I'm doing at ESPN, but in my eyes, they're doing it for a greater cause. They're doing it for more important reasons to glorify God. And it fascinated me. It was fascinating to me. And that really was this sort of second level of seed planting that I believe God was placing into me to make me start thinking, well, maybe I could do what I do, but do it for that greater purpose. Maybe that's coming sooner than I thought. And so honestly, from that moment in the summer of 2015, I just started building relationships intentionally building relationships deeper and more prevalent than I had before with like-minded people, believers who worked in different aspects of not only the faith industries, but other places. But I was specifically fascinated and interested in people who are working with churches, people who are working with nonprofits, faith-based organizations, people like places like Lifeway and Thomas Nelson Books and places like that. Like I wanted to meet the people who were high up working in those places and just build relationships with them. Didn't know what it would lead to. Didn't know if a job would ever come to it. All I knew is I just wanted to learn and be a sponge to as many people as possible. And that's what I did over almost a year and a half span until the opportunity came to leave ESPN. So I know that was a long-winded answer, which I tend to do sometimes as a podcast guy now, but the answer is yes. Like that magnet just opened up for opportunities to meet people and even a lot of believers who aren't, you know, sort of influencers, which is a buzzword that we use now, but they're just people who love God and just wanted to connect with me. And I love that. That's been really, really neat to see.
I love that story. So just let's go a little bit deeper into why did you actually leave ESPN? So not every guy listening needs to leave their secular job. God showed you that that was the thing you needed to do for a specific reason. What kind of brought you to that point? Because I imagine 15 years ago, you assumed you'd retire at ESPN and be there forever. So you know, you've given us some of the building blocks, but what kind of brought you to that conclusion?
Yeah, so I remember the first time I told my wife, the second time that I was really thinking about going into something else and leaving ESPN. This was fall of 2015, right after that social media conference I just explained. And it was a couple months later when I said, Dawn, I think God might be calling me away from ESPN. I said, something's going on here that God is stirring inside of me. And she just looked at me like, no, what are you talking about? We are in Bristol, Connecticut because of your job. And you work for the dream job. Disney owns you. You get all these perks and benefits and great health insurance and great life insurance and a great opportunity to, you know, work in such a cool place. Why would you want to leave that? And I said, exactly. I don't know why I want to leave that, but I know that God is stirring something inside of me. And it's funny because even then she kind of said the word to me, well, let's reevaluate this in 2 years, which is funny because it actually was almost 2 years. And yeah. I said, all right, well, I said, I just want you to know where I'm thinking. And we didn't really talk about it too much over the next year and a half or so. But certainly when opportunities came to meet somebody who worked in the Christian world or to build a relationship or even to have a conversation about a potential job, you know, I would talk to her about it. And so in the winter of 2015 into 2016, I had a conversation and got to meet the people at Pro Athletes Outreach. PAO is the name of their ministry. And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's an outreach, a Christian faith-based outreach to equip professional athletes and help them be good stewards and ministers of the gospel. And when I saw that this thing existed, I said, oh my gosh, this might be a sweet spot for me, professional athletes, faith. And we just had a conversation. I talked to their boss. I talked to the president of the company. I talked to one of their executive producers. And we just started talking, building that relationship. And honestly, I thought at that time, it was going to be ready. It was time to leave ESPN. Like, so January, February of 2016, I'm out. And a job offer never really came. So you can't just leave until it's clear what God is trying to do. And as we had conversations about potentially leaving, I remember telling my wife, and she's like, no, it's not time yet. It's not time yet. And I would argue with her. Yes, it is. What are you talking about? Don't you see I'm trying to do more for the Lord here? And she's like, no, it's not time yet. And I said, so you're telling me that it's not time for me to step out and do more for God? She's like, that's not what I said. I said, it's not time for you to leave ESPN. So she understood stepping out and doing more for God was a calling that was happening on my life, and things were starting to fester where you knew that. Like I became an elder in my church and I was speaking a little more and sharing my story. So she knew things were happening, but it was not the time to leave ESPN. And it wasn't until, and I spent the summer of 2016, a year ago, really diving in deep in my relationship with God and just pursuing Him, but doing it with the word patience embedded into my heart the whole time. Like, okay, God, I want to leave. You know I want to leave. I want to do more for you, but it's your call, not mine, on when this is. And so I really was pursuing the Lord as strong as I ever had with the idea of patience, impatiently pursuing Him, really, you know, as the center of the core of what I was trying to do. And in that patience, God opened up doors to meet a publisher to write a book. He opened up doors to speak even more. He opened up opportunities to just build relationships, even greater relationships than I had previously, with people in the industry, in the faith world. And this is all while I'm still at ESPN. So I look back at it now that I'm not there, and I'm like, God, first of all, my wife was completely correct. It wasn't time. But then God was really using this time while I was still working at ESPN to prepare me. So when it was time to walk through, I would be prepared to walk through, but I would be ready. Like, I just knew it was the right time. And so those same couple of people that I spoke to from Pro Athletes Outreach called me back in the fall of 2016, you know, November, December, and invited me to come out to one of their conferences down in Orlando. And we sat down and we talked, and now they had a real legit opportunity to offer me like a job and a plan. And it allowed me to not have to move to Colorado, which is where their base is, because my wife wasn't prepared to leave this area, the Northeast, yet. We have family here, and it's just important to still be around them. And they offered up an opportunity to work for them and still be able to live in Connecticut. And it was all these confirmations that God was doing here. And it was an opportunity to host a podcast. It was an opportunity to write and tell the stories of faith and sports through the lens of a website and through the lens of a magazine, and obviously the podcast too. But the big thing was, it was an opportunity that they presented to me to give me margin to pursue other things that I might be interested in, like speaking, like writing this book that we're currently working on right now, and consulting, working with social media, taking the skills and the talents that I had acquired at ESPN and giving back to the community, to the church, to nonprofits, to brands, whatever it is. And it just kind of all started to make sense. Like, yes, this is the time. This is the time. And I went to my wife about it. We prayed about it. We talked about it. And she was getting that confirmation too. And so it was early January when I was like, all right, it's time to leave. It's time to go. And it was February 10th of 2017 was my last day at ESPN.
That's such an exciting story. And, you know, I know not everyone listening is going to mirror that story, but the thing that we all can mirror is when God says go, then say yes. Yes. And when he's not saying go, then be patient and stay, and knowing he's actually telling you to be right there where you are. And, you know, you had an unsettling in your spirit for years, it sounds like, yes, that something needs to change, but you were misdiagnosing what those signals were.
Well, we're terrible gods. Time. We're terrible gods there, Phil. And when we try to play God, it usually doesn't work out in our favor. And I was trying to play God, and instead of letting God be God. And that's what happened.
We're going to need to bring this to a close here in a few minutes, but I would love for you to talk a little bit about the book that you're writing. I don't know if you want to like foreshadow what it's going to be about. We'll look forward to it coming out late this year, but what's the book going to be about?
Yeah, so the book is a very personal story. It's funny, when I tell people that I'm writing a book, they automatically think, oh, you must be writing about all the great stories you have at ESPN. And maybe someday, but that's not what this book is about. This book is about the very personal relationship that I had, or lack thereof, with my father. And so the book really came about from the first time I ever preached from the pulpit. In 2014, my pastor asked me to preach and share a message as an elder of the church. We're, you know, called to be ready to share messages occasionally and preach as well. And this was my first time ever doing that. And I was very nervous, very scared, but I kept thinking, all right, what am I going to preach about, God? And I kept getting this term forgiveness come into my spirit. And I was like, all right, I'll preach on forgiveness. And then I remember, like, wait a minute, I need to preach about my dad. I need to tell the story of my father and my relationship with my dad, because I, for the longest time, for 40 years, could not forgive my dad for his abuse of alcohol, for his lack of availability to his family, including his three sons, and to the anger, the abuse, just the brokenness that he had that translated into our family and really festered into this relationship that wasn't there. And so I shared this story, and I was just really... I was blown away by the response from people who were going through something similar. And I really didn't understand that until a second time when I preached this message on forgiveness to a bunch of teenagers at a youth camp last summer in July of 2016. And I shared this story with them, and all 80 kids, these are 13 to 17 year old teenagers, all came to the pulpit crying their eyes out, writing down names of people they needed to forgive or people that they wanted to offer forgiveness to that they hurt. And I just saw a powerful thing happen that night. And in telling this story to a couple of friends the next week, they said, you really need to write a book on this. And I kind of laughed at them. I was like, no, I'm not going to write a book. I'm not a writer. I have no interest in spending the time that it takes to write a book. Writing a book is no joke. And as a guy who worked in ESPN for a long time, I know that you need to put the effort in to make something really work. And I don't know if I was prepared to put this effort in to write this book. And so conversations continue to happen. And eventually I get on a call with a head of publishing for a company called Core Media, C-O-R-E, out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And I start telling him my story, and he's like, well, what kind of book do you think you'd write? And I said, well, listen to the story of my dad. And I shared it with him, and he was really fascinated by it. And about a week later, he calls me up. He's like, we want to do your book. Can I send you a proposal contract? And I said, yes, you can send me a proposal contract. I said, but I can't believe this is really happening. Like, oh my gosh. And again, this was all in the process of being patient with God about the next step of leaving ESPN. And when all of a sudden I'm getting a book contract handed to me to sign and to agree to tell my story, I knew it was from God. because I had, like I said, I have zero interest in writing a book, and I'm not a good writer, at least in my eyes. I don't think I'm a good writer. So why would God want me to write something when he knows I'm not a good writer, and want me to write a book when he knows I have no interest in writing a book? But God calls us sometimes to stretch and to go deeper in our faith. And I really believe that this was one of those moments. And so I said yes again, and I signed the contract, and we've been working on it now for 8 months or so. We just finished the very first rough draft of the entire book, so the first manuscript, which was exciting. And reading it last couple of weeks, I've read it over, and I really think this can have an impact for a lot of people. There's still a lot of editing to do. There's still a lot of work to be done. And we're hoping to have the book done by and released to everybody by the end of 2017. The goal is before Thanksgiving, but we'll see, you know, what God's plans are there. And just reading it back, and it really dives deep into my story, but it also has application in there to help others who are going through something similar. And it might be a broken relationship with a parent like mine was, but it might just be a broken relationship or something you just cannot forgive either yourself or somebody else for doing for some form of your life. So my prayer and my hope is that this book at the very least can impact one person. And if it does that, then it was worth writing.
Well, we'll be looking forward to that coming out. I think the theme of forgiveness is one that we all obviously have received from Christ, but it's something that's tough to extend it to others, especially if we feel wronged. And
it is.
Actually, I was listening to someone teach recently who I became convicted that while they had wronged me, I had used that as an excuse to disrespect them and treat them poorly and talk poorly about them behind their back. And that therefore I had used my lack of forgiveness as an excuse to sin.
Yeah. And that's God exactly right. You just described my relationship with my dad in a nutshell. But yeah, it's so true.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the dynamic that takes place. And
completely.
We need to forgive as Christ first forgave us. And that sounds great when you write it on a tweet or on a picture somewhere, but to actually do it is tough.
Yes.
And so I think your book's going to be inspiring to many people, and it's your story. You know, your story is different.
Yep.
And I think we need stories. You know, your website says tell your story.
Yes.
And we all need to tell each other's stories because it encourages us in our faith.
Yeah.
I would love to get one last story from you if you can.
Sure, of course.
It's you've interviewed or been behind the scenes with a lot of great athletes, and I'm curious, is there one Christian athlete that stands out to you as like a pinnacle of this was an amazing opportunity that you had and God used it in some kind of instrumental way? And I'm digging for something that may not be there.
No, it's there. I got one for you. There was 2007, the NFL season that year, the Patriots and Giants played in the Super Bowl. You may remember the Patriots were undefeated. They went all the way, you know, 16-0 and eventually 19-0. And they are 18-0 and get to the Super Bowl, and the Giants upset them. And in the midst of that Giants Super Bowl run, which was an improbable run, and Eli Manning wins his first Super Bowl, David Tyree comes to the forefront, and he makes the most famous catch now in Super Bowl history, that famous helmet catch that propelled the Giants to going down and driving for a touchdown at the very end of the game. And so my job at the time at ESPN was a talent booker, talent producer, and we booked the guests and had them come on ESPN shows to do interviews. So we immediately, you know, the Giants win the Super Bowl and we're like, all right, who can we get to do interviews for us on the different shows? And David Tyree, as I started to read a little bit about him, I see in his interviews, you know, in the newspaper or online, that he's giving glory to God in everything that he did and everything that he was able to accomplish. And I was like, well, that's interesting. But he's also a very relevant guest. He's not just somebody that you're digging deep for. Like, this guy made the catch. He's the hero of the Super Bowl. So we start doing some digging. I call up his agent, and we get David Tyree to come to Bristol 3 days after they win the Super Bowl in Arizona in February of 2008. So 3 days after, it helped that they lived in New Jersey, so it wasn't very far from Connecticut. But 3 days later, he gets in a car and he gets a car to Bristol, and I meet him in front of ESPN, and I take him around to all of our different shows, Mike and Mike, SportsCenter, NFL Live, all of our shows, First Take. And so I'm bringing David Tyree around, and as I start talking to him, we start talking about our faith, and he really starts talking about his faith, and his story is just amazing. And even the story of faith that was in and prevalent in the locker room leading up to that season and winning the Super Bowl was incredible to hear. And nobody was really asking him about this on ESPN for obvious reasons. They're asking him about the helmet catch and what was it like to win the Super Bowl. And they're not asking him about his faith. So I wanted to ask him off camera about all that. And I had to keep reminding myself that I'm a diehard Dallas Cowboys fan. And so I don't like the New York Giants, and I don't want to see them do well. And yet I'm meeting David Tyree and listening to his story, and suddenly I didn't care that he was a member of the New York Giants. I was just so proud, excited, happy, encouraged for his faith and all the success he was able to have. Now, his story is pretty fascinating because he never really became this giant superstar player. He had his one moment in the Super Bowl, and his career was pretty much done 7 months later. So he today still is out there preaching the gospel, sharing his message of hope and sharing his message of miracles, obviously, with what happened at the Super Bowl. But I was so encouraged by him, and it changed my focus on players and rooting for players. I still want the Giants to lose to the Cowboys every single time they play each other. But I remember now that these guys are people, and they have jobs, and they have families, and they have, you know, friends, and they have faith, and they're people. And so as much as I will continue to root for the Cowboys to win every single game they play for the rest of my life, I also have a different perspective now, and it's mostly in part because of David Tyree and his faith.
Now, that's a really encouraging story, and I agree. You know, when you get to know that someone's a believer, whether they're on your rival team or wherever they are, we're on a bigger team together.
Correct. And,
it can really
truth.
Change that perspective of, you know what, this is just a game, but we're in this war that's eternal. And it's so good to know that there are those people around you. So,
yeah, it was cool. It was a great day.
Yeah, that's awesome. We could talk for hours. I think I would love to pick your brain about all kinds of stories, but I want to be respectful of your time and our listeners here today. So tell guys where they should go to learn about you. Is there a website, or do you point them to Twitter or Facebook? Where would you like them to go?
Yeah, I mean, everything you just mentioned is where I am. I mean, I have a website now. It's jasonromano22.com. So jasonromano22.com. My Facebook page is jasonromano22. My Twitter page, which I'm really active on and on there quite a bit, is just at jasonromano, R-O-M-A-N-O. And reach out to me. You know, I'm sending an encouraging email now on Monday mornings to anybody that might be interested in signing up for that. And all that information is on my website or on Twitter. And certainly as more news comes out about the book and, you know, the release of that, I'll be sharing that information as well all over my social media pages. So, yeah, it's not hard to find me.
Fantastic. He's not to be confused with Jason Romero, who is a famous blind athlete. I actually thought that's who you were at first, but it's Jason Romano.
There you go.
Jason, I'd love to give you the closing word here. What would you like to share as we leave?
I think I just want to encourage people that are listening that, you know, it's okay to doubt. It's okay to be scared. It's okay to be fearful. It's okay to wonder and question God, but it's also really okay to say yes to God. And he challenges us sometimes to say yes to him. And sometimes it's small things like just talking to the person that you sit next to every day in the cafeteria but don't say a word to. Maybe God is calling you to just say yes to that. For others, it's a bigger call, like myself, to say yes to leaving a really comfortable job and taking 40% of my pay and saying goodbye to it to follow God's calling. And so I just want to encourage people that, yes, it's okay to be fearful and scared and even a little worried, but God is in control. And if you say yes to God, he will take care of you. I am living proof of that.
Amen. Jason, thanks for being on the show.
Phil, it's been great talking with you, man. Thank you so much.
Wow, what an encouraging conversation that was with Jason Romano. If you want to get the show notes, go to maninthepew.com/023. That's episode 23. And if you've got any questions or comments or thoughts about future guests, feel free to reach out to me, Phil@maninthepew.com. I love where Jason left us in that conversation, and I'd love to leave this thought with you today as well. If you feel God is prompting you to say yes to something, whether it's big, like leaving your career and stepping out into the unknown, or it's small, like just reaching out to that neighbor who you just haven't been able to have a great relationship with, or someone at work who you sense there might be a curiosity in them about the gospel, say yes and trust God to take care of those fears and doubts. With that, go change your world, starting at work, at home, at church, and at play. This has been the Man in the Pew Show, and I'm Phil Mershon.